Good morning and welcome to WTOP's Ask the Mayor program. I'm Richard Day along with WTOP's Mark Seagrave and our guest in the studio all this hour, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. Now, we will get to your calls as well. You can phone them in at 877-336-1035. And if you want to email questions, go to WTOP.com. Now, here's Mark.
Mayor Gray, we appreciate you coming in. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the Occupy DC movement that obviously has been in the headlines all across the country. They're marching right now, as a matter of fact, up to Capitol Hill. First, tell us, what is this costing DC taxpayers in the first 2 months of the Occupy movement?
Well, of course, these are estimates, Mark, but around $1 million, you know, and that involves largely, of course, the police activity where they've had to monitor the movements of the people who are part of it. And there really are two Occupy movements in the city. There's the group at Freedom Plaza and another group at McPherson Square. And then, of course, we have DDOT costs that are associated with traffic, directing traffic when they are out moving. And then we've got DPW, which does the trash pickups and, you know, ensuring the sanitation is maintained. Those are minimal by comparison, however, to the MPD costs.
And so at about $500,000 a month that this is costing D.C. taxpayers, how long can the city continue to afford to have them here?
Well, it's difficult to answer that question. You know, obviously, we plan for these kinds of demonstrations because they occur all the time here in the District of Columbia because we are the nation's capital. So it isn't as if we haven't, in a general sense, planned for demonstrations in the city. But again, we don't have any estimate on how long this will go, nor how long, you know, our budget can handle these kinds of costs.
Is at some point this become a budget discussion? Will that force your hand at some point, do you think?
Well,
I mean, $500,000 a month when you're considering scaling back hours of libraries, everybody's asking for money, everybody in the country's in tough economic times. How long can the city continue to foot the bill on this?
Well, again, it is a financial consideration, but not solely. Obviously, there's the constitutional rights of those who are involved. We've been working hard to try to delicately balance the concerns that are involved in this, the financial concerns, the rights of those who are marching, the rights of those who live in the District of Columbia. We had a very extensive meeting with the federal officials just the other day, with our local law enforcement officials, the National Park Service and the Park Police, because obviously both of these places where they're located represent federal property. You know, Freedom Plaza is managed by the Park Service, and they had to have a permit to be there. And then you got McPherson, where they didn't require a permit as long as they are below a certain level and don't engage in certain camping activities.
So what was the agenda of that meeting with with your federal partners?
Just to look at where we are and making sure that we are fully coordinated, recognizing we have to work very effectively together in order to manage this.
Was an end date discussed?
No, there was no end date that was discussed.
And what about the possibility of asking the federal government to reimburse the District of Columbia for some of this money that the city's putting out?
That is certainly a possibility, especially since there are federal properties that are involved here. We have not had a thorough discussion of that, Mark, but I wouldn't take it off the table at all.
And then talk about the arrests. Things have been going pretty well compared to other cities around the country. Really, the D.C. Police Department has a good relationship with the occupiers. But the other night over at the Franklin School, I guess did they cross the line at the Franklin School?
Yeah, I mean, what they did, and it's we have not been able to figure out exactly who the 13 people were. They appear to be some fringe group associated with the Occupy movement, because there are components more of the mainstream Occupy, if you will, that have denounced the behavior of these people. Essentially, what they did was on Saturday evening, they broke into the Franklin, you know, school, which is not being used at this stage, apparently, with the intent of occupying the building. The MPD responded and arrested everybody who was in the building.
Were you part of that decision to make the arrests?
No, but at the end of the day, the MPD did exactly what they should have. When people break into property like that, they should be arrested. And I have in the aftermath indicated that lawlessness will not be tolerated in this city. We have tried to recognize the concerns of the people who are involved in this. We've tried to recognize the constitutional issues. But we are asking, we are demanding that people engage in lawful behavior.
More of your questions for D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray after traffic and weather on the 8th.
We continue with Ask the Mayor. Our guest for the full hour is D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. We're taking your calls at 1-877-336-1035, and you can email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Mayor Gray, let's move on. I know you want to talk about good news and positive stuff. That's the positive message that you want to put out, and I promise we'll get to that. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. City Hall is mired in scandal these days. We're still waiting the three federal investigations that are ongoing. You are the focus of one of those investigations, the Suleiman Brown allegations. Now people are talking about Jack Evans, the D.C. council member, and money that he reported that he was making, income that he was making, but wasn't reporting where that money was coming from, $50,000 a year from an insurance company. Just talk about what that has done to the ability of D.C. government to function properly.
Well, Mark, I think we're actually functioning quite well. I talk a lot about our priorities, and I'm happy to do that, that we established when we were coming in the door fiscal stability. I think when people see the audit that will have been done for the fiscal year into September 30, they will realize that this city is in very good shape financially and that we manage this city, since January in a fiscally prudent manner. One of the key barometers of that is a lot of people don't realize that about 6 weeks ago, we sold $900 million in bonds. $100 million in bonds went for 3.7%, which is a phenomenal interest rate. The other $800 million was sold at 0.27%, which is almost no interest rate. I think that is a phenomenal statement about our management, our fiscal prudence. In fact, we were able to achieve some savings there that we then invested in helping to keep the Martin Luther King Jr. Library open on Sundays. When you look at law enforcement, we are on course to have the lowest level of homicides in this city in 42, 43 years. As of this morning, and I read the crime report every morning, we have 100 homicides for this year with about 5 weeks remaining. Last year, we had 132. So we're well ahead of last year in that regard. And community policing, the work of our chief and those working with her have contributed mightily to that. Education reform is continuing apace. I invite people to look at the fact that I believe we are at the top of the list in terms of early childhood education in the nation and what we're doing there. About to roll out a plan in a few weeks around infants and toddlers. We also have made phenomenal progress on the special education front. Our transportation system is working extremely well at this stage. We're going to talk about that next week. And we also are reducing rapidly the number of children we're having to pay for in private schools.
For special education.
That's exactly right, Mark.
Well, let me ask you about the investigation in the Suleiman Brown allegations. Has there been any movement that you know of? Have you provided any new documents, been asked to come in and be interviewed? Any word from the U.S. attorney?
No, I have not been asked to come in, and we've cooperated, as we indicated we would, with everything we've been asked to do, but there's nothing much that we've been asked to do in the recent
And Harry past. Thomas, who has agreed to repay $300,000 of taxpayer dollars that your attorney general said that he misappropriated, you've been somewhat wait-and-see on this. Should that be read as a defense? Are you aligning yourself with Harry Thomas, or—
Well,
Are you concerned about these allegations?
Of course, we're concerned about all the allegations, Mark. But, you know, we want to let the justice system play out as it should. I have not involved myself one way or the other in the situation with any of these investigations, other obviously than the one that I'm involved in, with Mr. Thomas or any other concerns that have been raised about, lawmakers in the city.
And what does this do when you look at your own future? Does this make you want to stay in public service? Are you thinking about when it comes time to decide whether or not to run for reelection?
Well, I think you always think about those things. You think about those things no matter what, because this job is a grueling job. And I have to tell you, I really enjoy public service. I enjoy serving the city. I enjoy getting out with people. For me, what has always been a positive for me is being able to do something that makes one's life better. And I've been able to do that in the nonprofit sector, you know, working with people with developmental disabilities, working with children and youth who are runaway or homeless, working in the Department of Human Services, and now here. You know, looking, for example, having become the council member in Ward 7 in 2005, looking at some of the things I was able to get started and see them come to fruition. An example being a brand new H.D. Woodson High School, which people had wanted for years. Now to see that having come to fruition. Working on so many development projects in Ward 7, in Ward 8. That is what is of the greatest importance to me and, frankly, is one of the greatest positive reinforcers that I experienced no matter where I worked.
You know, you just celebrated a birthday, but when it comes time to run for re-election, you'll be 72 years old. Do you think you'll run for re-election?
I don't know, Mark. I mean, we'll face that when we come. I mean, I happen to have a lot of energy. I happen to love working, as most people know. I probably work 16, 17 hours every day. So I feel great at this point. And, you know, as some people say, not in a trite sense, hopefully, but age is a number. And I think you evaluate these things on how you feel about what you're doing, both psychologically and physically.
Sounds like if you had to decide today, what would the decision be?
Well, I don't have to make a decision today.
D.C. Mayor Vince DeGray here for the hour to take your calls and emails and look at traffic and weather on the 8s.
Continue with Ask the Mayor. Our guest this hour, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. We're taking your calls at 877-336-1035. And also, you can email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Segrave.
And let's get a quick call in here. David is calling from Quantico. David, you're on with the mayor. Go ahead, David.
Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, on WTOP, Mr. Gray, I heard that the DMV was giving away free HIV testing. I'm curious about the logic behind that and also who's paying for it in these tough economic times.
Well, that's correct. In fact, we're trying to reach people wherever we possibly can. We have a 3% prevalence rate of people who are infected in the District of Columbia. And we're trying to do everything we can to encourage people to get tested because, frankly, we know now after having lived with this epidemic for three decades, those who may be infected, we have the ability now to ensure, caught early enough, that people's quality of life will not be materially affected at all. So it's not just the DMV. We're doing it in our income maintenance centers also where people go to apply for Medicaid, food stamps, cash assistance. The underlying principle is that we are reaching people where we possibly can, especially in areas of the city where the incidence and prevalence rate may be much higher than others. We just entered into a partnership with the with a private organization, Family and Medical Counseling Services, that also has gotten some funding from the private sector to be able to do this. So I think wherever we can engage in prevention, we ought to do it, and I think this is a major step forward.
The second part of his question was, who's paying for this?
Well, that's what I said. We have a private sector organization.
It's this partner that you have.
Yeah,
so no
right.
tax dollars are going to fund this?
Well, of course, we've got tax dollars that are involved in our staff, you know, with the Department of Human Services Economic Security Administration, which is the new name for IMA. And with the Department of Health, so we've got staffing. But these tests are very, very inexpensive. Even if we had to pay for them ourselves, I would encourage that we do that because look at the consequences of failing to have a good detection and prevention program. The costs are incredibly high, and especially when we have so many people who are on public insurance companies.
Let's get another caller. Jay is calling from Rockville. Jay, you're on with the mayor. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. Gray, first thing I want to say is I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing, and I didn't even know you were 72 years old. But
I'm not. That was Mark. That's not. I'm not. That's several years down the road.
Yeah. Well, you know, my question to you is being a commercial broker in the D.C. metro area, there's this like four or five proposed Walmarts that's supposed to be coming in to the District of Columbia. I understand about the job creation and stuff, but what about the smaller shops, Mayor Gray? How that would detriment them? And is the Walmart's going to do the whole shebang with selling the beer and wine and everything else? I'm just a little bit concerned about with the smaller shops these days.
Well, we have been quite supportive of small businesses here in the city. And what a lot of people don't realize is that small businesses represent 70% to 75% of our businesses here in the city. So we continue to support them. We have an entire department that focuses on small businesses, the Department of Small and Local Business Development, which is headed by Harold Pettigrew. So there will be no reduction in our commitment to and attention to those who run small businesses here in the city. And when you look at some of the Walmarts that are being proposed, they are in areas where I don't think small businesses will be affected at all. For example, we've been trying to get, you know, an anchor for Skyland now. I mean, the effort with Skyland has been going over 22 years. And we finally have a breakthrough with this. And by the way, if I might, we had an interest expressed on another potential high-profile tenant in Skyland as a result of Walmart coming in.
Who is that?
We won't talk about
it. Come on, we name names, Mayor Gray. Are we talking about a food retailer, or what are we talking about?
It's Mark Seagraves Incorporated.
I wish. Part of the issue, though, a lot of people have with Walmart is how they treat their employees. There are union groups in the area who are protesting Walmart coming to D.C. because they worry that they won't pay fair wages. What do you say to those concerns?
I think that has really markedly improved. We've spent a lot of time with Walmart. First of all, there's a common assumption that they don't offer benefits, which they do offer benefits. Their wages, if you look at their average wage for associates in Maryland and Virginia, where they have stores, it's between $11 and $12 an hour. We also just entered into, we announced it yesterday, the first retail community benefits agreement in the history of the city. We'll have about $20 million that Walmart will be investing in various charitable purposes in the District of Columbia. They will generate about $15 million a year in tax revenue. So there will be some real contributions, not the least of which will be 1,800 jobs.
Have they made a commitment to what percentage of those jobs will go to D.C. residents?
Yeah, the majority of them will go to D.C. residents. That's the language in the CBA, which obviously means 51% or more.
And part of the concern for opponents is that agreement that you're referencing now, that the Washington Post has a very good overview of today, isn't binding. And so it's kind of a gentleman's agreement, but we push comes to shove, we get down the road, and it doesn't happen. There's really no way to enforce that.
Well, let's look at what Walmart already has done. They made a grant earlier this year of $3 million for workforce development here in the city. I think they recognize, Mark, that their reputation is hugely important to their ability to be able to do business here in the city. So I think they see the consequences of not fulfilling the promises and the commitments they've made.
I know you've made an agreement with them that they will not sell guns or ammunition in the District of Columbia, but the caller asked about alcohol sales. Will they sell alcohol?
I don't know. We'll look at that. But they wouldn't be the only, you know, store like that sold alcohol. We have, you know, other similar operations that sell alcohol in the city. I don't know that decision has been made. We'll continue to talk with them about that.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray on Ask the Mayor, taking your calls and emails. We'll have more after a look at traffic and weather on the 8s.
We continue with Ask the Mayor. Our guest this hour, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. Our phone number for your questions is 877-336-1035, and you can email questions at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves.
Mayor Gray, let's get right back to the phones. We have Myra calling from Arlington. Myra, you're on with the mayor. Go ahead.
Hello, Mayor. I want to express my appreciation for this show. I rarely get to listen because I'm usually working at the Washington Navy Yard. I started there about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
If I could have been off on a day when Kathy Lanier, I would have posed this question to her. But in her absence, I'm going to pose it to you. I'm very concerned because I'm not usually driving on the Southeast Southwest Freeway during rush hour. Frequently, I'm driving over there at non-rush hour times or coming back. And the speed on the Southeast Southwest Freeway is quite excessive. I think the speed limit is 40. It might be 45. People come up behind me, pass me, 70. It has to be 70 to 80 miles an hour. I never see any enforcement over there. I see this with, regular cars. I see this with buses, big trucks. And it's just a very scary thing. And you know, if you want to get some revenue production and safety at the same time, I think that that would be a good place to be policing.
Well, don't forget that we have cameras that we use for enforcement of speed at this stage. I happen to know. As a matter of fact, there's a car that sits there constantly on one part of the freeway and captures people going by. Because I actually go home that way every night.
Have you gotten a ticket on your way home?
Actually, I'm not driving.
Yeah, there
but there are people who are getting tickets because of their excessive speed on the Southeast Southwest Freeway. We need to remember now, with technology having moved to where it has, that it isn't just now a matter of a police officer in a car stopping another motorist and writing a ticket. That a lot of the tickets now are issued as a result of being able to do that kind of electronic surveillance and then capturing, you know, who the driver is and issuing a ticket electronically.
You mentioned electronic surveillance. It's a perfect segue. The Washington Post over the weekend had a very good article about automated license plate readers. And the Washington area has more than anywhere else in the country. And these are devices. Some of them are stationary. Some are on municipal vehicles, police cars and whatnot. And they can read 1,800 license plates a minute, I believe, going up to 150 miles an hour. And in the district, you hold on to that data of where people are driving, when they're driving there, and you keep that data for 3 years. This isn't legislated. There have not been any public hearings on this. And Chief Lanier says she likes this. It helps them to catch bad guys, are her words. But the ACLU questions, why would you track people's comings and goings who haven't done anything wrong? And why would you do it without a warrant?
Well, first of all, I think it is an incredibly effective crime-fighting tool. And when people know this, I actually think it's a crime deterrent, Mark. This is evolving technology. We are in an evolving era around additional technological advancements that we are able to use. I don't know whether this needs to be regulated or not, but I have no doubt that this will be something that will be discussed, you know, with the legislature here in the city. You know, Phil Mendelson, who chairs the Committee on the Judiciary, does a great job. He's very effective. And it is something that we undoubtedly will talk with him about. But I think the potential crime-fighting, crime-prevention benefits of this are tremendous.
You don't have any privacy concerns for people or thoughts about, you know, other jurisdictions hold this information for a couple of months. D.C., way out of the mainstream of – I mean, this is going on all over the country, but nobody saves this data as long as D.C. does. 3 years that you're holding on to – you know, where people are driving and when they're driving there.
Well, let's remember, too, Mark, we are the nation's capital, where we attract people who normally wouldn't go somewhere else. And being able to have this kind of historical data, I think, potentially could be very important to us in being able to fight issues. You know, the issue with the snipers of several years ago, that was discussed also. And if we had had that kind of data, we may have been able to head this off long before it was stopped. So it will evolve. It will change. It may be regulated over time. We'll see how this unfolds. But right now, I look at it as an absolutely wonderful addition to our arsenal of tools.
We mentioned Chief Lanier when she was on the show last month. She said she's personally talked to you about renewing her contract. What's the status of her contract renewal?
I'm not sure exactly where the contract as a document is, but I think, you know, I've said many places, I have enormous respect for Chief Lanier. I love working with her. I think we have an excellent relationship. We talk constantly. You know, she works well with Paul Quander, who's our deputy mayor for public safety and justice. And I think Chief Lanier has done a phenomenal job here in the city. Again, she's a big proponent, as am I, of community policing. It develops the relationship in a very constructive way, you know, with folks in the community, very transparent in trying to help people understand how we're fighting crime, how citizens can be involved in this. So without getting into the details, which I can't because I don't know all the details of a contract at this stage, I think she's someone who's done an absolutely sterling job for the city, and I look forward to her being here.
Let me ask you, Montgomery County Council, Nancy Florine and another member who I can't remember his name, I apologize to him, sent you a letter asking to consider when you're building the streetcar system to extend it up through Maryland, up 16th Street, up into Silver Spring. What's the likelihood of that?
Well, I hope it's good. You know, we need more regional cooperation and collaboration. And certainly, you know, these kinds of forward-thinking transit approaches have enormous significance for us as a region. I'd love to work with Prince George's County or areas of Virginia, you know, to be able to do the same thing. Rusher and Baker and I have an excellent relationship. We probably talk, you know, several times a month about various issues. So I think when you look at the need for, you know, more regional collaboration, this kind of transit approach, this kind of transportation option is one of the ways to do it.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray here taking your calls and emails on Ask the Mayor. Now look at traffic and weather on the...
Continue with Ask the Mayor. Our guest this hour, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. We're taking your calls at 877-336-1035, and you can email questions as well at WTOP.com. Here's Mark Seagraves once again.
Well, Mayor Gray, it is the Thanksgiving week, and I know you're going to be busy giving out turkeys to people. Councilmember Barry also having his annual turkey giveaway. But there's something much more important going on tomorrow than food and eating, and that is the annual football game. Tell us about the Turkey Bowl.
Well, it will be an exciting game this year, Mark. We have two of the absolute finest teams. Coolidge Colts and the Dunbar Crimson Tide will play. And they played just a couple of weeks ago in what I think arguably is the greatest public high school game we've seen in the city. Went into overtime, final score 43-42. And they will match up
against a defensive powerhouse.
Absolutely. Scoring engines.
That's right. It's no secret that you went to Dunbar, so we can only assume that you'll be rooting for Dunbar.
I'm rooting for the best team to win. And I think that, you know, I think it'll be a great game. We got great coaches on both teams. You got great kids on both teams. It's just, we had a luncheon for them yesterday. And it was so animated, so upbeat, and you just left there feeling so good about where these two schools are and the commitment to be able to play a good game.
A kickoff's at 11 o'clock tomorrow at Eastern High School on Capitol Hill. Tickets, I believe, are $10 at the gate.
Yep.
It's always a big crowd, and weather is going to be perfect for this game. It really is a great event. It's a great way to start your turkey day.
It is, and I hope that we have overflow tomorrow. You know, for the first time ever, we've got... a sponsor, Safeway, has stepped up. They're going to be sponsoring this game for 3 years, $150,000 over a period of 3 years that will benefit these schools. Comcast is going to televise the game. It will be on at 7 o'clock, taped on 7 o'clock on Friday. And it will reach households, you know, well into Maryland as well as far away as Richmond. What a great way to showcase these kids' talents. And those are the kinds of things that I think get kids on the right path and keep them on the right path, because we're doing things that reinforce the positive things in their lives.
And you announced a new athletic director. So you now have a female athletic director in the District of Columbia. And very notably, coaching tomorrow will be one of the first female high school coaches in the country.
Perhaps the first.
And talk about the challenges the athletic director is facing.
Well, there are a lot. You know, this is an effort that, you know, the problems have been there for a number of years. First of all, it's an under-resourced office, and we're going to try to do more, especially around the marketing end. But we've got to look at, you know, certification of coaches, for example, to try to make sure all of our coaches on the field really have a certain minimum skill set in order to be able to be out there. We've got to look at the rules of eligibility, and we've got to look at the disparity. You've got great teams like Coolidge and Dunbar that have 35 or 40 ball players, but we also have high schools that can barely field enough players to play, you know, 20 ball players. And some of the scores in these games are really just hugely they're routes. Let's put it that way.
Speaking of football, Councilmember Evans, Councilmember Brown, and former Redskin Brig Owens took a secret trip down to Tampa to take a look at their training facilities. You're really making an effort to, in one way or another, have the Redskins have a presence in Washington, D.C. Tell us what your efforts are.
Well, the training facility, of course, is well out in Virginia now, and they do their training camp there. We really believe that the Washington Redskins ought to be have a presence in Washington. And the best opportunity to do that right now would be to have the training facility come back to the city, because many, many years ago it was here. I think it was George Allen, when he was the coach, took the team out to Virginia and developed what then was the absolute best training facility in football. You look at some of these other training facilities now, and they are phenomenal. We went to Tampa Bay, and by the way, I want to make it clear, I paid for this trip out of my pocket, not one penny of public dollars and public money involved. Just a phenomenal facility, and that's exactly what we ought to have here in D.C.
So what are you doing? Have you talked to Dan Snyder? Are you presenting some type of proposal to him, incentives to him? I mean, where are we nuts and bolts on this?
It's discussions right now. I think first and foremost, there's got to be some indication that the team wants to be, you know, with their training facility. It's got to be in the city. And if we get that, you know, indication from them, then I think you get down to the details.
Have you had any feedback from the team?
Well, we've had discussions with people who are associated with the team. For example, Brig, you know, works with the team every day in one form or fashion, not in a formal sense, but, you know, he's one of the greatest Redskins ever to step on the field. So we work with him. We've talked to team officials, but we have not gotten down into concrete proposals at this stage.
How about to Dan Snyder? Have you talked to him? Have you asked for a meeting with him?
We want to hear from him. Obviously, at the end of the day, it's got to be Mr. Snyder and those who are team owners who say this is something that we're interested in doing.
And is the city willing to put up any money for this?
I think it's going to be hard for us to do that, but there are other ways that we can be helpful at this stage, and we'd like to be able to have those conversations in a concrete, specific way.
Speaking of football, what about D.C. United? You know, there's more and more talk of them going to Baltimore or College Park or somewhere in Maryland. What about keeping D.C. United and getting them a stadium in Washington?
Well, we are talking to D.C. United officials. We would love to have D.C. United stay here in the city. But again, it comes down to being able to find a place to have a stadium in the first place. And then secondly, of course, being able to have the money to do it.
We are with D.C. Mayor Vince Gray, taking your calls and emails on Ask the Mayor. We're going to get some more calls after traffic and weather.
Our final segment of Ask the Mayor with our guest, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, and here's Mark Seagraves.
Mayor Gray, before we get to the calls, let me ask you about a recent settlement that was in the news. Dante Rollins, a young boy who was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer a few years ago. The two officers involved in that shooting were cleared of any wrongdoing, but the family sued the city for $100 million, and recently the city settled with the family. How much is the city paying to the family of Dante Rollins?
Well, it's certainly far less than $100 million. It's actually less than $1 million, Mark. And we felt, given, you know, the circumstances involved, you know, 14-year-old kid who, you know, two police officers involved, 14-year-old kid who himself had a checkered past, what the family has been through, it just seemed to be the prudent thing to do at this stage, to settle this. You know, the father has been quoted, I think, several times. I think he's weary in this situation. I think that they were ready for it to be over with. So, in substantial part, given the relatively low sum that's involved by comparison and the emotional stress that the family has been subjected to, it just seemed to be the right thing to do.
Were you involved in the decision to settle?
Well, ultimately, of course. but the attorney general did the discussions and negotiations on behalf of the city. And as he always does, Irv Nathan made a very compelling case for why we should move forward.
So less than a million, more than 500,000. Can you put an exact?
It's between 500,000 and a million.
Let's get to the phones. We have Mildred is calling from Anacostia. Mildred, you're on with the mayor.
Hi, Mayor. First, I want to thank you for the bridge project, 11th Street Bridge project coming into Anacostia.
It's going to be terrific, isn't it?
It is going to be terrific, but getting us there 2013, I guess every day the bridge project backs the traffic up to Pentagon City. And for those of us in Anacostia, you know, you got to go roundabout, possibly around the Woodrow Wilson Bridge to get home. Is there some relief coming for us, for those of us in Anacostia, as we move toward 2013?
Well, the relief will be the bridge itself. As you well know, and I know too from living, you know, east of the river, the traffic has been a nightmare, especially on the Southeast-Southwest Freeway, where you start around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and frankly, you get these backups that will run until 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. It has been a little bit inconvenient, but I think you can see perceptible progress with that bridge really virtually every day. And when it's finished, it's going to divert all of that traffic away from the District of Columbia. I actually did one day sat in the traffic and looked at the license plates of those on the Southeast Southwest Freeway. And really, it was about 90% of those cars had Maryland tags. And they will be diverted from the District of Columbia in the future. So what I would ask is that people bear with us, recognizing that relief is on the way, the end is in sight, and it will be a far different experience for people who live in the city.
Let's get another caller in here. Mandy is calling from Rockville. Mandy, you're on with the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Mandy Lippman. Although I live in Rockville, I visit the district frequently. Thanks for taking my call. When I visit the district, lots of times on nights and weekends, I'm seeing a lot of overflowing trash cans. The trash cans that just sit on our street corners. And I just wondered, when I visit other cities like Philadelphia, it seems like there's new things out there. I know your need and your interest in becoming one of the greenest cities. And I was wondering how you're focused on how D.C. can become a little greener with just the trash that's on our streets that goes into our waterways. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Well, again, you're right. We are focused on becoming the greenest city in America. And, in fact, we are working now on a sustainable D.C. plan, which will look at these kinds of issues. It will look at energy conservation. It will look at, transportation and trying to become increasingly green in that area. We have we are near the top, if not at the top, in terms of LEED certified buildings in the nation at this stage. So, our DPW folks do a great job of picking up trash because I'm out late at night a lot and I see the trucks out, getting that trash picked up. But obviously we are working now to get people more oriented towards recycling programs and want to be, again, the greenest city in America.
Mayor Gray, we've had a lot of emails about the Florida Avenue market and the status of the market and when it might reopen.
Don't know. It's a privately run operation, Mark, as you know. I actually went over there the night of the fire and first of all, congratulate our FMES folks because they did a great job there that night containing the fire. I don't have a specific date at this stage. But as soon as we do, we will be happy to put that up on the website so people will know.
You made a point at your press conference announcing your new communications team. I will use the phrase, there's a shakeup in your communications team. I know you don't like that characterization. And you took issue with some of the reporters at the press conference saying that the press isn't doing a fair enough job of covering the positive performance of your administration, and we are focusing on the negative. Is that a concern of yours? Is that a problem with the media, or is that a problem with your office not getting the message out?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the media have a job to report balanced news, and I would assume you guys are, you're skilled, you're professionals, so you get at the news yourselves. If there are ways in which you think we can do a better job of getting information out, I can tell you quite sincerely we would love to know that, because there are so many things that are going on. So much development is taking place in the city. So much going on our, I didn't even talk earlier about the One City, One Hire program, where we—
How many jobs have you created?
491, not just created, 491 people who have been placed into jobs since we started this effort. In addition to that, Mark, we have 200 companies that have signed on. I was looking at data the other day, and companies that they have indicated to us, we want help in filling X amount of jobs, anywhere from 3 to over 40 jobs. So when you add in those that ultimately will be filled by district residents, we're up in the hundreds of people now who are going to get jobs and or have gotten jobs as a result of One City, One Hire.
How can somebody get a job? If they're out there right now listening and they need a job, they want to participate in this program, or they're an employer that want to participate, where do they call? What do they do?
They can call the Department of Employment Services. And what I would suggest, I'm going to make this very easy, call 311. And ask the call taker when they answer to connect them with DOES because they want to talk about One City, One Hire.
And that's as if you're looking for a job or if you have a job to give.
That's the beauty of it. We want to be the bridge between those who need a job and those who have a job.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, we appreciate you coming in every month. We'll see you at the Turkey Bowl tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, traffic and weather on.